has arranged through the marvels of electronics and many of the other marvels of this day in which we live, some beautiful lessons that we can learn and appreciate from our older brethren. And I think you will be in store for a few surprises in what Brother Edmund has arranged for us. And now at this time, it is my privilege to turn this meeting over to our dear Brother Edmund Jesuit on Echoes from the Past.
Ninety-five years ago, a periodical was started, was published, called the Zion's Watchtower. The editor of this magazine was Charles T. Russell. And on the front cover of this magazine appeared a great fundamental truth. It read, "A Herald of Christ's Presence." This year, the Lord's people are celebrating the 100th anniversary of our Lord's return. And I think it is very appropriate this morning that we review some of the harvest highlights of the last century. The word echo contains the thought of repetition, to reproduce. And so for the next hour or so, we're going to do just that. We're going to reproduce some of the harvest echo. As you well know, the work of the harvest was delegated to a special servant, appointed directly by the Lord. And I think few persons have left so rich a legacy to others as that faithful and wise servant left to the church. And certainly his life was a splendid example, a strong inspiration to every true Christian. And surely you and I this morning have abundant reason to praise and to thank God for every memory of him. And I think this can be best accomplished by a faithful use of the truth that had given unto us. He indeed was a faithful and wise servant. Now let us go back, take our minds back to the early beginnings, to that wonderful period in God's plan known as the harvest period. Pastor Russell's congregation was really the world. The newspapers of that day frequently would refer or mention that the world was really his parish. He served in the Bethel home at Brooklyn, as well as in the Brooklyn Tabernacle. The London Tabernacle claimed him as the pastor. He served in the Washington Temple. He was appointed pastor of the New York and the Chicago Temples. And as we review the records, they tell us that he traveled over 1,000,000 miles and many times 50,000 miles in just 1 year. He delivered well over 30,000 lectures. Some of these were at least 2.5 or 3 hours long. And he wrote about 50,000 book pages, fulfilling the title, I believe, "The Man with the Writer's Inkhorn." Pastor Russell was the author of the 6 indispensable Bible keys. These were published in all the many foreign languages of the world. This full set of studies in the scriptures were sent to any part in the world postpaid for a sum of $2. Now, these studies in the scriptures were distributed to the public mainly through the Colporteurs. And in the year 1913, there were 600 Colporteurs in active service. Now, in connection with the selling of the scripture studies, Brother Oscar Magnuson, who was a Colporteur in that day, told me this story quite a few years ago. In one particular town, a minister warned his flock not to buy any books authored by Charles C. Russell. And so all the Colporteurs that went into this particular town naturally were not able to sell any books, except for one Colporteur, and that was Oscar Magnuson. And his approach was rather unique. When he went into this particular town calling on people, naturally the question was, who wrote these books? Brother Oscar would answer, "Brother Charles K. Russell." sales came thick and fast. And before long, Brother Russell learned of this rather novel approach. And knowing that Brother Magnuson was due to be at the Bethel home in a few days, he thought this would be a good place to correct Brother Magnuson as to how he should pronounce his name. So one morning, Brother Russell came down into the dining room, and in came Brother Magnuson. And so Brother Russell came up to Brother Magnuson and says, "Good morning, Brother Magnuson." Brother Magnuson got the point. Brother Russell need not say any more. I think we all agree that these six Bible keys have really unlocked the scriptures for us. And with the aid of these six Bible keys, indeed, the divine plan of the ages became very clear to us. At the age of 34, Brother Russell wrote and published volume number one, The Divine Plan of the Ages. At the age of 37, the Harvest Messenger wrote and published the second in the series, The Time Is at Hand. The third volume of Scripture Studies, Thy Kingdom Come, was written and published by Brother Russell when he was just 39 years old. At the age of 42, he wrote and published a book entitled The Battle of Armageddon. Volume 5, 3 years later, at the age of 45, came Volume 5, The Atonement Between God and Man. And the final book in the series was written and published at the age of 52, The New Creation. In 1914, the gem of the harvest was introduced, the photodrama of creation. As the work of the harvest began to expand, Brother Russell was always seeking new ways to present the truth. And perhaps the success of the harvest work was largely due to the introduction of the photodrama. It was the first in religion, portraying God's plan or the Bible by the use of pictures. Brother Russell initiated a huge advertising campaign, calling attention to this unusual production, the photodrama of creation. And one of the chief avenues of advertising was the distribution of large tracts. Now, this tract that he developed and designed was not small. It was a newspaper size. And I have a sample up here. As you can see, just the size of a newspaper, much in reading, much in the way of pictures, very unique. And if you'd like to see this at the end of the service, it'll be up here on the platform. A very interesting type of tract that would attract people. Brother Russell was always interested in combining the eye with the mind. And so these tracts were distributed, yes, by the millions. The photodrama book had a circulation of over 2.5 million copies. And the cost of this production is said to have been over $1 million. Now, this unique method of spreading the gospel was not only confined to our country here in the United States, but indeed it was worldwide. And just imagine, it was being shown in 80 cities daily. I doubt if there's a production since that could match those figures. 80 cities every day. And it was estimated that this drama was shown to at least 10 million people. One of the large cities where this drama was shown was right here in the city of Chicago. Now, this building that you see before you acquired the name as the IBSA Temple. Now, this structure was leased by the Chicago class specifically to show the drama. Now, this building stood on the corner of 7th and Wabash. And if you ever have an opportunity to pass on that corner downtown, pause a little bit and reflect the building that stood there and had the truth shown in such a remarkable way. This building was the former Globe Theater. And the brethren completely renovated it, decorated it very beautifully, and it became the home of the Chicago Bible students. The drama was shown twice daily, as you see on the wall, free, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and at 8 o'clock in the evening. And in all the advertising, you'll always find the words, admission was free and there was no collection. And this was something that no denomination could match. And the average attendance here at this Chicago temple were about 1,200 people every day. Now, one of the operators for the projectors was Brother Jens Copeland. Now, these machines depended on a very strong arc light. They didn't have the equipment that we have today to produce light. The machine had to be turned by hand, coordination, and great care had to be exercised because the film was flammable. Now, since there was such great activity every day in the temple, Chicago temple, naturally you would have to have a lot of workers. Now, these brethren that you see here were known as the temple family. The tall brother in the back row is Brother Irving C. Foss, just a young lad in those days. The couple on the right in the last row are Brother and Sister Moorheiser. Later became Brother and Sister Morehouse. In addition to the operators of the projectors, there were phonograph operators. These provided the sound. And we have with us today one faithful sister that performed this function, and that's Sister Morehouse, the top row to the right. Another feature at the Chicago Temple was the baptismal services. The brethren were able to arrange a portable tank. This would be wheeled out on the stage. As you can see to the right, a scaffolding was put up, and the brethren were immersed right there in the Chicago Temple, right on the stage. Meetings for the brethren were held in the temple every evening, 6:15 and at 7:15. These were held in the reading room. Now, these meetings were Bible studies. Now, as one would enter this huge building, he would walk into this beautiful auditorium. And I think it would be well to pause here and to listen to a voice that not only filled this auditorium, but many auditoriums throughout the country. The voice will be of John T. Reed. First, he will give his testimony, and then he will sing for us. This was made a few years ago, so some of the dates that he'll mention, just ignore these. The voice of John T. Reed.
Associated with the English-speaking Friends of Chicago for 14 years. And as I recall it, when looking back upon those days, I had never once given a thought to the possibility that Brother Russell might be taken from us. I don't recall the feeling so much as grieving as being stunned by the unexpectedness of it. It was just as though an essential part of one's life had suddenly and irrevocably been removed, and you didn't know what to expect. But here we are, 52 years beyond the anticipations of most Bible students living at that time. The Lord has not forsaken us yet. It was never my lot to be associated with the work at Allegheny or Brooklyn, but I was often privileged to have a small part in public meetings and in conventions and on two transcontinental trips by rail of several weeks' duration each. On these trips, Brother Russell spoke to the public for almost 2 hours each night, and at the end he would be so exhausted and wet with perspiration due, no doubt, to physical weakness that he felt the need of sitting apart without being disturbed. He liked to have someone with him, but not to be talked to. And once or twice, I was chosen to be his shield. It was an interesting and blessed experience to travel as one big family of nearly 200 friends from city to city while we slept, and to be at a different convention nearly every day. We were equipped to have all our breakfasts and other meals that were necessary. The two Pullman sleepers next to the kitchen were made into long dining rooms by placing tables between the seats. The friends acted as waiters, dishwashers, etc., and I was a coffee boy. The last car of the train was a combination parlor and staterooms, one of which was occupied by Brother Russell and his secretary, enabling him to keep up his writing for the Watchtower and the direction of the Brooklyn office. The train was quite a sensation at the cities where we stopped en route, and this no doubt helped to draw the public. There were 4,000 in attendance at the public meeting in Los Angeles, and Brother Sexton addressed a 700 overflow in a hall on the floor above. After Brother Russell had ended his talk, he went up and spoke to these also for half an hour. The Los Angeles meeting could not have been held had we been dependent upon the regular train schedules. An interesting feature of this trip was the meeting at Regina, which was not one of our intended stops, for we knew of no friends here. We arrived in Regina about 2:30 p.m. on our way from Edmonton to Winnipeg, and found that we would be there several hours before the CPR could take our train on. Someone suggested that we hold a public meeting, and it being immediately agreed upon, one brother secured a hall which we could occupy until 7:30 p.m. Another arranged for the printing of announcements, which became available about 5 p.m. And as fast as they came off the press, brethren took them for distribution, knocking at the doors to be sure that the people got them. As a result, about 400 of the public, supplemented by the friends aboard train, filled the hall. Brother Russell was truly an example of wholehearted service to the Lord. And whereas it was the scope, love, and justice of the divine plan of salvation that first attracted and then held us, yet he always endeavored to wean his readers to the study of the deeper spiritual truth, which alone can make us meet for the inheritance of the saints in life. Thank you.
Give to the winds your morning glory. 'Tis the glad day so long foretold. 'Tis the bright morn of Zion's glory. Prophets foresaw in times of old. Tell the whole world these blessed tidings. Speak of the time of rest that nears. Tell the oppressed of every nation. Jubilee lasts a thousand years. A thousand years of coming glory. 'Tis the glad day so long foretold. 'Tis the bright morn of Zion's glory. Prophets foresaw in time.
One of the features at the photodrama presentation was the free distribution of peace pins. Now, there was a special announcement that was made to the public asking them to become sons of peace. And they were asked to wear a PAX pin. Now, Brother Stromberg, who's up in front here, which we'll introduce a little later, has one of these pins on his lapel. And so when you greet him today sometime, take a look at that pin. It's the head of Jesus with the Latin word at the bottom, peace, or pax. The photodrama of creation was always introduced by Pastor Russell, either in person or by film. I think it would be well now for just a few moments to relive the introduction to this great production, the photodrama, and listen to the voice of Charles T. Russell. The first voice you're going to hear will be his, and then the second voice, the one that had something to do with the drama work in between the various parts of the drama.
The photodrama of creation is presented by the IBSA, the International Bible Students Association. Its aim is public instruction along religio-scientific lines and in defense of the Bible as the inspired Word of God. Many claim that each of its parts is more helpful than a year in college, or the four parts equal to 4 years or more. We trust that this may prove to be so for everyone now present. As the motive of the enterprise, we reply that it is purely philanthropic. It is supported wholly by voluntary contributions, and these come from Bible students who themselves greatly benefited, are desirous of passing the blessing on to other hearts and heads. Surely the value of an intelligent knowledge of God and the Bible is inestimable. The photodrama of creation presents the 7 days of creation as 7 epochs, each 7,000 years long, and the 7th day as not yet complete. In this view, 1,000 years of the 7th day remain, during which Earth and her population will reach the grand perfection designed by the Creator. It is held that this final 1,000 years has already begun. With this fact, is accredited the great progress of our day, intellectually and materially. In other words, the great 7th day of the Genesis account is itself a great week, each day of which is 1,000 years long. The 6 already passed have been man's worst week of struggle against sin and death under the curse pronounced in Eden. Now the great Sabbath is beginning. It God has promised that the curse shall roll away from before the blessings of Messiah's kingdom, for which so long we have prayed, thy kingdom come, and of which we have so often sung as it reached by and by. The photodrama of creation is a philanthropy for the education of the public in the things of God. It is supported by voluntary contributions. Nothing is ever solicited. This drama will be duplicated in all cities and lands as God shall provide the money. Every penny goes into the work. Our association pays no official salary. We have seen and heard part first of the photodrama of creation. We hope that as a result, our reverence for our great Creator is increased. The Bible story of the fall of Father Adam under the curse or sentence of death, may we never forget. The reign of sin and death and its bad influence even upon angels leading up to the deluge, we have fixed in our memory. God's oath-bound covenant with Abraham, we have seen to be the basis of all human hope of a resurrection to a future better condition. Part second will begin with Moses and God's typical dealings with typical Israel. It will show us the Exodus crossing the Red Sea, the giving of the Mount Sinai law, the manna, the tabernacle and its sacrifices and other wilderness experiences, Israel crossing Jordan, Joshua's battles, Israel's kings, Saul, David, Solomon, Solomon's temple, Elisha, Israel's last king, Zedekiah, Daniel's prophecies, the Logos, Jesus' birth, boyhood, manhood, baptism, and miracles. Our critics declare that we have the finest collection of historic religious art ever exhibited on earth. The arrangement of these in their historic order greatly enhances their educational and entertaining value. Nothing of the kind has ever before been attempted. We trust that our patrons appreciate the fact that the art feature of the drama represents millions of money and great care exercised in the reproduction and coloring. The value of the drama to you will be doubled by the study of its literature. It is supplied by the ushers at a small price to cover costs, or you are welcome to a cheaper copy at the exit free.
The photodrama was shown in four parts. Each of these parts took 2 hours in length. And the complete showing, if you wish to see it complete, would take 8 hours. The slide portion of the drama consisted of some nearly 500 slides. Now think of the tremendous work that was required to prepare these slides for viewing. In those days, there was no color film. Each slide had to be treated by itself, individually colored. And thousands were required because of the amount of showing throughout the earth. And so you can see the project of this magnitude certainly required talent, time, and money. And the Lord provided all three. The work had to be accomplished, and it was. Now it will be our pleasure to view a few selected slides as shown in this grand production, the photodrama of creation, 60 years ago. The creation, the seven creative days, Mother Eve beguiled, or created. Dante's Inferno, the frozen lake. Traditional hell. Satan's lie. Abel's death. Lot's wife, the finding of Moses, the prophet,
Prophet Jonah, Napoleon and the Pope, and finally, Samson. As Brother Reed mentioned in his remarks, Brother Russell always encouraged Bible study. And so this announcement that you see on the screen was made after the drama was shown. Now, I think as a fitting climax to our program this morning, we're going to have the privilege to interview some of the old-timers, those that were associated with Brother Russell in this great work of the harvest. The echoes that we're going to hear, I think you're going to agree, are very rare and they're precious. We just have a few of these echoes left. We have with us today Sister Morehouse, Sister Hirsch, Sister Glass, Brother First, Brother Stromberg, and Brother Weiler. We had expected that we'd have Brother Reed with us and Brother and Sister Hollister today. But due to physical reasons, they were not able to come. However, they send their love to you. Now, someone asked me, well, how many years have all these brethren been in the truth? I was handed this slip. Sister Morehouse was in the truth 66 years. Sister Hirsch, 77 years. Sister Glass, 66 years. Brother Wylam, 61 years. Brother Stromberg, 62. A total of 332 years in the truth by all these brethren. Now, before we begin our interviews, we have an item of interest that was used in the work of the harvest, and it was called the Dawn Mobile. Now, this was introduced in the year 1908. Alvin, would you put it closer right up here? Incidentally, this is not for sale, though there you got a price tag of $2. That's what they sold for. Sister Morehouse, would you get up, please?
Do I have to stand?
I think so. Let all the friends see what you look like here.
Oh, they all know me.
Sister Morehouse, as I noticed there from the slides, you were one of the projectionists there in the temple at Chicago. Just what kind of a work was that? Just what did you do specifically?
Well, there was a screen in front. We sat behind the screen, and there was a little peephole and a mirror. We could not see the movies. We just had to listen and drop the needle at the right time.
You think that this is one of the first talkie pictures?
Yes, it was.
Now, besides you being a projectionist one in charge of the phonograph, did you spend full time there, Sister Morehouse?
Yes, we lived there. Dan and I had charge of the temple. I was the mother. I did the cooking, and we cleaned, and we ushered, and we ran the phonograph, and we folded tracks, and, well, we just spent 24 hours a day working.
Well, now, when did Brother Russell come to the Chicago temple? Do you remember that occasion?
No, he was there, but I couldn't tell you exactly when he came.
Well, now, if you're going to pick out a highlight, Sister Morehouse, in that Chicago temple, something outstanding, did you think you have anything that happened there that was really something that you would never forget?
Well, the whole experience was a highlight as far as I was concerned. We had been in the call porter work, and, of course, we didn't have any money, so Dan got a job driving a milk wagon, and we thought we'd put a little money in our pockets for a while so we'd have something to eat. And then they were looking for someone to take charge of the temple. So I said to him, well, let's go. So we went. And we just kept right on with it.
Now, you were also engaged in the call porter work, Sister Morehouse. Can you tell us a little bit about that, just What kind of work was that? How much did you get paid per week and so on?
Well, we were married on Friday, and Monday we started in the call porter work, and we didn't get any pay at all. We got our books at wholesale, but we had no one to help us. If we didn't sell books, we didn't eat.
Did you ever see anything like that during your days?
Oh, yes, we have one, and I just gave you a picture of it. You put it in your pocket, but you didn't look at it.
I have it someplace here. It must be. I didn't look at it.
I happen to have two, so I gave one to Edmund.
Well, we appreciate that. Who was the inventor of this system?
James Cole.
Now, was there anything else that you engaged in, Sister Morehouse, beside the call porch work, Chicago Temple? Did you ever go along on the pilgrim trips with Brother Morehouse, do you remember?
No, occasionally, afterwards. But when we went to Bethel was right after Brother Russell died. He died in October, and we went to Bethel the first part of November. So we were not there when he was there.
Now, if someone asks you, what was your impression of Brother Russell when you first met him? Just what went through your mind? Could you give us that?
Well, I was immersed when I was 14 at Nashville, Tennessee, and he gave the baptism talk, and Sister Rose Hirsch was one of the sisters who helped us.
Well, that's very nice. Well, then, as long as you referred to Sister Hirsch, let's talk to her a moment. Thank you, Sister Morehouse, very much. Sister Hirsch, would you please stand up? You face the audience.
Oops.
Sister Hirsch, this gadget that you see up here, could you tell us a little bit more about the history? Where did this come from? What was it used for? I think this came from your garage or your attic or basement?
Attic. Just recently. Well, that came from Brother Cole invented that for us to carry our books, deliver our books.
And I understand about 30 sets of scripture studies would fit into a satchel or a suitcase like that?
20-some, I think, that I used to carry, about 20.
Did you have one of these?
Yes, I had one, yes. I thought that was mine. We were to come in because Brother Stewart just got it at our home.
Well, the reason you can't recognize that, when we painted that gold, we kind of finished it up a little bit.
Oh, right.
We knew it was used a lot, and yes. So we thought we'd just kind of dress it up.
Yes.
Well, what about some more of your experiences in the call porcher work, Sister Hirsch? Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I think maybe it'd be interesting to friends to know how Brother Russell encouraged me to go into the call porter work. It was in a one-day convention in Ohio when I met Brother Russell, and shaking hands with him, he said, "Sister, I understand you're contemplating entering the call porter work." And I said, "Yes, Brother Russell, I am." He said, "Well, why not now?" Oh, I said, "I'm not ready. I'm not establishing the truth enough to answer questions or defend the truth." He said, "That's not the point." He said, "The point is," he said, "you mustn't try to answer questions, but you have a book here that will help to answer their questions." He said, "Oh," I said, "I can do that, Brother Russell." So I was encouraged to enter the work.
You're not through yet. Sister Hirsch, I see you have a paper here in your hand. What's the paper about?
Well, it is a sermon that Brother Russell wrote, among the last ones that he wrote, and on laying up treasures in heaven. And the last paragraph is so wonderful, I thought I'd like to read it.
All right, why don't you do that?
Well, if I can see here.
Well, there's some light here. Want to come up here a little bit?
Thank you.
Here. Now there's plenty of light.
It's found in the reprint, 5863, Treasures Laid Up in Heaven. As the sun sinks at the close of each day and the shadows gather around us, how sweet to sing, I'm one day nearer home. We have nearly reached the mountaintop, and every day multiplies the evidences that the journey is nearing the end. Just how long it will be, we cannot know. Probably it's best we don't know, but we believe that it will not be long. This article was written in March 1, 1916, and it was only about 42 weeks after that when Brother Russell was taken away, October 31, 1916, the same year. So it wasn't long for Brother Russell. And we are here in 1974, and we see the evidence is multiplying around us that indicate that the time is growing short, and our deliverance, the deliverance for some of us, is drawing near, and we're thankful. And I'd just like to offer a word of praise about the power, the wonderful power of the truth, and satisfying how it has kept me through the years, and the blessing, practically all of my life has been spent in connection with the truth. And the corporate work, I was thankful to be in that. And in the drama work, I was one of the ushers, and I helped to color some of the slides. And I've had a favorite lot all my life, and it's been wonderful. And I was so happy to be here to see this. This is really wonderful. Paid for the trip and all the effort of coming just to see Brother Russell. How wonderful. Bethel was never the same after Brother Russell. We were there at Bethel when Brother Russell walked out for on the last trip. We didn't know it was going to be his last trip, but it wasn't the same after he left. Bright light had gone. But we're thankful that he's on the other side with our Lord in the work on the other side. And his work is still with us because we have his writings. I go to that every day. Volumes in the Bible and the Towers.
All right, thank you, Sister Hirsch. Thank you very much.
Talk too much.
Oh, you're right on time. Mr. Glass. Sister Glass, you were in the Colporteur work too, weren't you? Could you tell us what part of the country and just what were some of your experiences?
Well, we were married on Monday, and Monday afternoon we took a train down to it was in Indiana anyway, where the Morehouses were encamped with Brother Harrison, and he had come up to the city, and we were married, and we took the train right that same day and went down to this place in Indiana, and we called for her there. Of course, Dan and Nodi were very glad to see me. They were working there, and they had a lot of difficulties and trials, and they were glad to see somebody come down that could work with Nodi while Dan and Brother Harrison took their bicycles and went out and worked in the country. And they worked little towns that we couldn't reach otherwise. And I remember one day we were cooperating down in Illinois in the Carbondale district. And I was in a district that was very poor. They were mostly all our colored brethren there. And I placed 60 volumes. And Brother Harrison says, I'll never deliver half of those.
Is that one day?
In one day. And he always liked to take my orders to deliver for me because he had, in most cases, delivered almost all my orders. And he took this list of 60 books. He says, I'll never place all those books. Well, when he came back in the evening, he says, I haven't a book left. They were all taken. And we raised our delivery books, the delivery of the books, on the days when we knew that they had time to get their pay, because then if we didn't deliver them that day, there was never any books left. There was never any money left to pay for books. But I want you to know that we didn't charge the prices that we pay today for the volumes. We delivered the books for 35 cents a copy, or 95 cents if they took all the three books. And we stressed the delivery of the first three volumes, because we thought if they got the first three volumes, and if they read them at all, they would get the truth through them, and then later on they could get the rest of the literature.
Well, thank you very much, Sister Glass. I see somebody telling me time, so your time is up. We're glad that you came, and we appreciate your presence. Brother First, would you stand up, please? Brother First, you were one of the Colporteurs, I think, in those days. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
No, I wasn't a Colporteur. I was a motion picture operator.
Oh, you're a photodrama. Oh, I see. Well, tell us a little bit about the photodrama. Just what was your position in it? What did you do?
Well, I was one of the operators. And I started about in the year of 1913. There was several articles in the Watchtower that they were planning on this photodrama creation, and they were calling for certain brethren to qualify for various parts of the photodrama, and they wanted printers, and they wanted artists to paint the slides and so forth. And they also wanted unencumbered brethren who would qualify as an operator in the photodrama. So that looked good to me. So I wrote in, and as I would like to qualify as an operator. So they sent back a bunch of literature I could inform myself technically on the photograph. Then, at that time, I didn't have any practical experience. Then, in the year of in the early part of the year of 1914, Toledo, Ohio was one of the first places, one of those two or three places that opened up. And so I was anxious to see it. I took along a couple of sisters at that time. One of them happened to be my wife now. So anyway, we saw the drama, and while we were there, I told the manager of this, the theater that I would already set my name in at the Bible House as an operator, but I haven't had any practical experience. So she wrote to Brother Russell and wanted me to, if it was all right for me to go there and get my practical experience. So I came there shortly afterwards, and who would disclose was my tutor. You might say the one I got my practical experience was Jens Copeland in Toledo. And so I was there a short time. Then after I got my practical experience, I went down to Indiana on a trip. Then later I got notice from the Bible House to come down there because they wanted me for something. And when I got there, why, they had more operators than they had parts. So they put me into the first, I was going to say the first person I had to see when I got there was Brother Russell. And so then he directed me to the film department because they needed parts for the photodrama. And so I went into the film department, and the film department was where we would get the films in little sections and roll composition. And there was also titles to put in it. So we would compose all these sections of film to make a 2,000-foot reel.
Splicing, was it?
Yeah, splicing, and then until we had to put our cues in there and everything. And then I did that during the summer months. Then evenings, we would go out in different places around New York and show the photodrama. But one outstanding experience I had there, while I got personally acquainted with Brother Russell, my films would come in, and there were special films were not showed in the photodrama, and Brother Russell wanted to see it. So Brother Miller and Brother Russell and myself, why, we would walk from there over to the Brooklyn Tabernacle, and which is about a distance of about 3/4 mile back, and Brother Miller would and Brother Russell would sit down in the audience, and I would go up in the booth, show the picture for those special films. And then that went on for quite a few times, and once in a while, Brother Russell would come up in the booth and visit me up in the booth after I was through. And so these visits, walks back and forth, how I got personally acquainted with him, and then while I was there, I did made many trips for him, special trips. And so then, that as during the summer months, and one I might relate.
Well, first, we just have to stop because
okay.
I have a cue man there, and
he tells
me time is up. So
okay.
We thank you very much for coming here, Brother First, and relating your experiences. Brother Stromberg. You notice Brother Stromberg has the PAX pin and another little pin. You want to see it close. It's a pretty pin. Brother Stromberg, what kind of work were you engaged in? Colporteur work, photodrama work? What did you do?
Well, I was colporteuring. I started later than 1914, of course. I started around 1916. And I had, and you're asking the territory to make it short because I know your time is short. I'm going to say, instead of being what they might call a full-fledged culprit, although I did spend all my time in it for several years, I had the title of sharpshooter. You've probably heard of that.
Good title.
Yeah. And I had asked for a territory. They asked me what I liked to do or where I liked to be stationed. So I told them I was in Chicago. I was a young man at the time. And I got all the territory I wanted. As a sharpshooter, you go in any place. And I covered as much territory as I could in Chicago, and south side of Chicago, Morgan Park, Beverly Hills, and around there.
Would you define that, Brother Stromberg, when you say sharpshooter?
Sharpshooter, I mean, was one who could go in any place.
And sell anything?
And sell the volumes. And yeah.
Difficult areas.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say difficult. But anyway, they were all difficult. But anyway, so I went as far as Hammond, and East Chicago, and of course, Blue Island, and other little towns out that way. And I had a lot of fun. The people would call me almost anything when they saw me with the books. And we had persecution at that time that we don't have much of today. And when they found out I was what they call a Russellite, they closed the door as soon as I told them that. Well, I met a lot of people who loved the Lord and who accepted the truth.
Well, weren't they right when they called you a Russellite? Weren't you rustling up light?
No, it wasn't that, but... No, but I could have told them a lot of stuff about it, but I tell you, when you begin, you haven't got too much knowledge of the Bible. Afterwards, you learn as you go along by experience and so forth, so you can defend yourself better, and you're not in it to antagonize people. You're in it there because you love to tell them the truth, so I try that method, and I had quite a bit of success. Sometimes I got into a place, an elderly lady would come, "See me him, will you?" And then, "Let us have a word of prayer. Now, do you like coffee?" "Yes." And that...
You actually sang a hymn in the call part you
were? Yes, sir. You can imagine what that sounded like. And anyway, we had part of an experience all the way through there. And we arranged meetings once in a while. Sometimes we were with a brother Swingle, some of you know. And he was quite talented, you know, and they loved him. And he knew how to wear them. And quite a number of people came into the meetings and into the truth. And we rejoiced with them. And, of course, when it came to selling the volumes, I think that I got the books for 16 cents apiece and sold them for 32. And, of course, when a book agent found out that I was a book agent, he says, "There's a lot of money in that." And I felt there was, too. It was more than money. It was more than money could buy. And I feel that way today. And I had a wonderful experience. Then the war broke out, and I was drafted, and that was the end of that. And I got along fine then, too, because I knew the truth. And I knew Brother Russell, and I tried to act the way I have been instructed in the truth by Brother Russell, and there isn't a man since or before during the gospel age, I don't think, that anyone has done a better job than Brother Russell did.
Thank you.
I tell you, one more thing. When they reported that Brother Russell had died, it was a blow to me. I was at work. And then I read, it says, "We were solemn and sad, yet happy and glad, because we knew that the brother had gone to be with the Lord."
Thank you.
The Lord bless
Thank
you
very much, Brother Stromberg. Brother Weiland, please. Brother Weiland, you were, I think, associated with the work of the photodrama. What specifically, what area did you work in?
I had just come into the truth in Seattle. Sister Weiland and I had written to the society and volunteered our services, but we were too young in the truth to be accepted. So later on...
How young were you?
I was about 24, and she was about 25. We didn't get into the photodrama work in the way that the brethren here have told, but she was made an operator locally in the Moore Theater at Seattle, and I was an usher. And they had special service musically, and I did some solo work from the platform in that big theater. I was scared to death, but I did the best I could. And then later on, when Brother Russell was my first visit with... Well, I'm getting off the track. You want a photodrama.
All right.
Through
All right, fine. Let's go. Your association with Brother Russell, what contact did you have
with him? My first talk with Brother Russell, the first time I really had a chance to visit with him, I was very much perturbed, just coming into the truth. I was in the insurance business. My superiors were crowding me to sell endowments and limited pay life policies. And we expected the kingdom to be established in 2 years. And how could I sell a 20-year endowment policy when the kingdom was going to be here in 2 years? So I laid it in Brother Russell's lap. Arranged that I could ride with him from the Shrine Temple, where we were holding our convention at that time, to his hotel. And I told him my problem. He put his hand on my knee and he said, "Brother Wylam, you'll get into homes where the truth would never go. You'll get acquainted with the families there." He seemed to know more about that thing than anybody that I had ever talked to, even my own superiors. And he was well posted on that. He said, "You'll have a wonderful opportunity to tell people about the kingdom of Christ. The Lord has called you there. Stay there until the Lord moves you." In due time, the Lord moved me out. But that was the first personal contact. I had many contacts for a time. Brother Russell was giving his 30-minute or 20-minute talk at the break in the... For a 2 hour period, he'd come out on the platform, as you mentioned in your talk. But the devil was after the truth people and after the truth, and this, we didn't trust the, I say we, the brethren who had charge of this thing, figured that we ought to do all we could to give protection to Brother Russell. Not that the Lord couldn't do it, but we wanted to do our part too. So I was delegated to act as a sort of bodyguard to Brother Russell, and I would be back of the screen while he was waiting for the time to come to talk. And he'd walk up and down and up and down with his hands behind his back, that long coat, that beautiful beard that he had, much better than mine. And he had, I didn't talk to him, I didn't say a word, but I was there. And I was pretty husky then, and if anybody tried anything, they'd have run into a problem because I'd have battled them to protect him. And other times, I had to go from Seattle to Tacoma to meet him. He would come up the coast by train from Frisco and Los Angeles and Frisco and Portland. And then I would go to the hotel where he was lodged in Tacoma early in the morning, or maybe stay overnight before it Tacoma. And then escort him to Seattle on a little steamboat called the Flyer. It was a good vessel, too, but they had awful poor grub. One morning I had met Brother Russell about 6 o'clock, and we went down to the dock and caught the first boat to Seattle. He hadn't had any breakfast, so I took him down to the galley. That's the dining room and kitchen in the little vessel. All they had was 3-day-old donuts and stale coffee. And Brother Russell, with gratitude, accepted that. The Lord had provided it, and that was all right. Whatever the Lord wanted, he wanted. And he munched that donut and dunked it. And, I had many privileges of fellowship with him in a very meager way.
Right,
one time he chopped me down. I was leading the music, waiting for him to come. His train had been delayed. He didn't get in till about 10 minutes after the meeting was to start. And as usual, the song leader asked the speaker if he has a selection. And I turned to Brother Russell. I said, "Brother Russell, do you want another song set?" He turned around and said, "No, brother, your time is done."
So is yours.
And that was it. Now my time is done.
Well, on behalf of the convention, I think we are going to thank these brethren for being with us. There's just a few, and if you get a chance during the convention to shake hands with them, they can resume their autobiographies, whatever they had to offer here. Brother Wylam?